rubbing a well with you for the next couple of hours. And so it is my great pleasure to welcome an old friend who took the invite at the last minute to join us for the first hour. And so it's my great pleasure to welcome back to the flip side, Reverend Ted Pike. How are you doing, sir?
Real well, Robbie. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Well, you know, Ted, I find it kind of ironic when I read earlier this week the headline that says Joseph Ferrer of WorldNet Daily calls Reverend Ted Pike a lying anti-Semite. And this comes on the heels of the Anti-Defamation League earlier this week trying to explain its pledge. It's trying to get all the candidates for president to sign. The pledge is called the National Pledge for Unity on Israel. And
right.
I guess the ADL wants all the candidates to sign this pledge so that Israel will not be part of the political debate.
Yeah.
And this comes also in the same week that Alan Dershowitz and Abe Foxman. So you're in very good company this week, Reverend Ted. They were attacking a well-known international musician called Gilad Atzmon, who happens to be Jewish. He's a world-famous saxophone player. And he recently wrote a book called The Wandering Who, that received rave reviews from the likes of Mersheimer and Walt. And Abe Foxman referred to the support that Gilad Atzmon is getting from Wersheimer and Walt as lying anti-Semites. We're speaking with the Reverend Ted Pike, and we're going to be talking about WorldNet Daily, Smearing a Good Man, when we return after these messages. Welcome back to the Flip Side on this Friday, October the 28th. We're speaking with the Reverend Ted Pike. You can access Ted's website at truthtellers.org. And Ted, you know, Gilad Atzmon has challenged Alan Dershowitz to an open debate anywhere at his choosing to challenge him in Dershowitz referring to Gilad as being anti-Semitic, and you pretty much have thrown down the same sort of gauntlet to Joseph Ferrer of WorldNet Daily to respond to the many articles that you have written critical of his Israeli First rhetoric. Have you received a response from him on this?
No, I haven't received a response, but it's you see, over the last several years, I have been troubled because I am an evangelical Christian. Joe Ferrer claims to be an evangelical Christian, and his huge news organization is really a watering hole for 7 million visits by largely evangelical members of the Christian conservative right. I've been very troubled because he really is an oracle for Zionist misinformation and propaganda, and I have written a number of articles over the last several years taking him to task for his distortion of historical reality and even biblical reality concerning Israel. And evidently, he's just kind of gotten fed up with Ted Pike as this gadfly continuing to come and sting him. And so in several internet communications which came to me just this last week, I saw that he seems to be describing me as a liar and an anti-Semite. And certainly if I've intercepted several of those, he's probably doing that to more people who are inquiring, saying, how do you respond to Ted Pike's criticisms and documentation and so on? But what we're seeing today is an increasing intellectual and moral bankruptcy of the Christian Zionist position. They're kind of going on the gasoline fumes of the idealism, the lockstep Israel first, unconditional support of Israel. They have manifested over the last century. But increasingly, the reality is, and the world knows it, very largely a non-Christian world knows it, that Israel has done wrong. Israel has done massive wrong, massive bloodletting and atrocities since very early in its beginning, certainly since the 1940s. And it's time for Christians to face in the fact that just as the Jews were castigated by Christ and the Hebrew prophets, it's not anti-Semitic to give constructive criticism to the Jewish people, to the state of Israel, to keep them from repeating the same mistakes.
Do you think it's possible that the venom that Joseph Ferrer has against you is in large part because of your crusade against hate speech legislation, which is obviously a tool that the ADL has been promoting for many years?
Well, actually, quite the contrary. I don't think that's what his problem is at all, because I am quite grateful to Farah and WorldNet Daily. During the last 10 years, or seven maybe years, they, of course, I have been fighting against ADL hate crimes legislation since 1989, and with national broadcasts and distribution literature and writings and so on. But around, let's say, about 2004 or 5, especially after the arrest of the Philadelphia 11 Christians who were thrown into jail by the Lynn Abraham, who was a Jewish national board director of the ADL, the district attorney of Philadelphia. When that outrage came out and I got on the literally hundreds of broadcasts nationally, Sarah picked up on that and started actually printing some of my material. And in his right-hand writer, Bob Unruh, was very friendly and worked with me to a large extent in holding back the passage of the federal hate crimes bill. And I really say, in all generosity, that WorldNet Daily has done more than any other evangelical organization to popularize a suspicion of hate crimes laws, especially in Canada and England and elsewhere. Of course, they stay completely away from the criticism of ADL to a very large degree, like all evangelicals. No, that's not where his beef is with me. What I'm doing is basically when he comes out with preposterous, non-historical fantasies, just rank Zionist propaganda. For example, he has repeatedly affirmed that even as late as 1948, there was a very minimal Palestinian presence in Palestine, that large percentage of Jews, even a majority of Jews, were there and were regarded by the British and the United Nations and so on as the proper Palestinians. But the Palestinians, he says, were a kind of a riffraff people who came into a region of sand dunes around the time the Zionists came in, and they kind of piggybacked on the prosperity and the agriculture and so on that the Zionists brought to that region. And so, like the Zionists, he says, the Palestinians were people without a land. They didn't have a nation. They didn't have an authentic land claim to the land of Palestine, and therefore when they fled in 1948, he says it's preposterous they come back in and claim that they once had a national identity in Palestine. What I've done in a number of my articles, in fact, one of them, which he specifically referenced in a email to Jeff Rentz as being lies, is entitled "Debunking Joe Farah's Jewish Fables," and that's printed right at the top of our homepage right now at truthtellers.org. People can read that. And I just go down the line and I point out that there was always a very substantial Arab presence in Palestine. Even in 1920, it was at least 600,000 there, and there was something like 600 villages, small towns and villages and so on. And the Arabs were always the majority. In fact, in all of the outlying of these 600 towns and villages, British census statistics show that they were about 98% of the population of those cities. Even in Jerusalem in 1948, the Arabs outnumbered the Jews by 2-1. And so it's this kind of Zionist rhetoric which he keeps running through again and again. It's very, very tiresome, very misleading, and I've just had to take some pot shots at him. Evidently, it's really gotten under his skin because he seems to be losing normal caution as a hard-nosed newspaper editor, and is going out on a limb accusing me of that which he cannot prove.
Well, you know, Ted, I'm sure you have seen the shift that WorldNet Daily has taken over the years, and the reason for his thought process on the Palestinians is part and parcel of the theme that runs through a lot of editorials from WorldNet Daily, which is I guess the word for it is Islamophobia.
Yeah.
They do promote a lot of the discredited so-called terrorist experts, the Pam Gellers of the world, and in today's very strange media that we have, if anyone shows any inclination towards saying anything favorable about Palestinians, well, you are immediately tarred and feathered with a very broad brush of being pro-Muslim.
Yes, but the world is changing, and that's the reality I'm trying to impress on Farah and the rest of these Israel First evangelicals, that they can no longer hunker down behind a barricade mentality and simply throw out one-line accusations against people like myself and others, smear words, the epithet of anti-Semitism. They can't follow anymore the ADL lead and just tar anybody who speaks up in favor of compassion on the Palestinians as an anti-Semite. And what I'm trying to do is to say, if evangelical Zionist first theology and politics is so bankrupt and so impoverished of the ability to finish a paragraph and to have spokesmen who can enunciate the traditional Jerry Falwell New Right position, but instead just has to resort to defamation along with the Anti-Defamation League, then what we have here is an intellectual system which is going to go the way of the dinosaur. I'm calling Farah to come out. Let's have a discussion, intelligent discussion.
We're speaking with the Reverend Ted Pike. We'll take another short commercial break and be right back after these messages. Welcome back to the Inside for this Friday, October the 28th, speaking with the Reverend Ted Pike. You can access his website at truthtellers.org. You know, Reverend, I was thinking during the break, the argument that Joseph Farah uses to justify his Zionist ideology is interesting in that those people in South Africa that supported apartheid used the exact same example as to why they supported apartheid, and that was before the white people came to Southern Africa, it was just a barren land, and there were no indigenous black people there at the time. And that's pretty much the argument that Joseph Ferrer is using, is that the reasons the Palestinians should not be recognized because the Jews got there before them and there was nobody there when they got there.
Yes, and I point out from impeccable sources, including the League of Nations, the British Mandate, and then historical records going back even to the Ottoman Turks, that there was a sizable Arab population, certainly close to 600,000 at the turn of the century, and many Arab villages. And even though the highlands around Jerusalem, when Mark Twain visited those in the late 1800s, he said he was impressed by its barrenness and the lack of Arabs to be seen, but contemporary witnesses proclaim that at that time, Palestine in other areas, especially the Valley of Esdraelon, was lushly filled with every kind of citrus and wheat and olives and a fantastic agricultural economy. In fact, the Palestinians were renowned as the agriculturalists of the whole Middle East. And what's really interesting is that when the Israelis finally expelled 800,000 Palestinians who were orchardists par excellence, who were businessmen, who were weavers and wheat growers, all that kind of thing, suddenly Israel seized literally tens of thousands of acres of the finest produce in the Middle East, and then began to tout to the Christian evangelicals that prophecy was being fulfilled, the land of Israel was blossoming like a rose, and God was proving that he was fulfilling Bible prophecy. In reality, there was a huge land grab from the finest agriculturalists of the entire region. And So what Farah does, of course, is to retain these evangelical Zionist myths intact. He seems to be unaltered by my criticisms, my documentation. Keeps spewing the same kind of thing, and it really makes me wonder how sincere he really is.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I don't know if you caught it at the intro at the top of the hour. Usually on Fridays, I have Charles Paulson from Straight Gate Ministries on my show every Friday, and Charles is very active in his own special way of confronting evangelical Zionists. He holds vigils outside of predominantly evangelical churches. He had a vigil last week outside of the Faith Bible Chapel, which is a mega church in Nevada, Colorado, where they were hosting a night to honor Israel, and needless to say, the featured speaker was John Hagee.
Yes.
And he said he was amazed by the level of anger that their protest engendered from, as he referred to them, as angry evangelicals and Jewish Zionists.
Yes.
Do you see this anger factor ratcheting itself up for no other reason than I think this is the first time in many years that the Zionists have been exposed for who they are.
Yes, absolutely. I get that that impression all the time. You see, what, as I said earlier, the world is changing. There are an estimated from 120 to 150 nations in the United Nations who may be voting for Palestinian seat in the General Assembly, and that vote could happen in a month or two, and the world consensus is of righteous indignation against Israel, particularly in Gaza. I'll continue that in a minute.
Oh, absolutely. Be speaking with the Reverend Ted Pike. We'll take another short break. Be right back. Welcome back to the Flip Side on this Friday. We are speaking with the Reverend Ted Pike. His website, truthtellers.org. And before the break, Reverend, I guess the question was, why are evangelical and Jewish Zionists so angry?
Well, they're very frustrated because they've had a kind of a free ride, riding a wave of world indulgence and even a carte blanche for Israel to do anything it wants to in the Middle East that it consumed certainly almost a full century. But with Sharon's invasion of the West Bank around 2002, with the present siege in Gaza, with the flotilla massacre and so on, the good sense, the righteous indignation and compassion of the world is turning against Israel, and no longer can evangelicals luxuriate in pro-Israelism being in fashion. Instead, their kids are going to colleges and finding that there are many, many protests now on college campuses. The ADL is crying out its eyes because of all these protests. And it's becoming almost politically incorrect on college campuses, especially to be before Israel. And rather than having a solid biblical base for saying that Israel can go in an unrepentant 7 million Jews can go in injustice and even atrocity and drive out indigenous Palestinians and make life a living hell for the people of Gaza. Instead of having any kind of moral high ground, as I mentioned earlier, the evangelicals are just kind of having to go, as I said, in the gasoline fume of the idealism and the exaltation of Jews in Israel just because they are ostensibly God's chosen people. And in reply to anyone who challenges them to think, to get their heads out of the sand and look at what is really happening in Gaza, what is really happening even to Christians in southern Israel. Messianic Christians are being persecuted by the Hasidic, the ultra-Orthodox there, and the government of Israel doesn't do anything about it. The police look the other way. But if the evangelicals still close their eyes and dream of a previous era when Israel could literally almost do no wrong. And so all the evangelicals can do is to push away your literature, walk the other way, go off in a huff, or follow the lead of the ADL and call you anti-Semitic. All they can do is shout out one-liners out at you, turn their back, and walk away. Now, as I said earlier, no intellectual system that is so barren of intellectual apologetics and effective response to new challenges is going to last very long if it continues that kind of an attitude. And what I'm trying to do, quite frankly, with Joe Farah is to shake things up here a bit, to get a discussion going. I have challenged him, in fact, to, if he can bring forth any, literally any example in which I have distorted his point of view, lied, taken anything out of context, I will publish that conspicuously at truthtellers.org. But if he can't do that, it's an indictment on him. He certainly will be seen by many in the right and in the far right as so disintellectually dishonest that he simply cannot substantiate what he is saying, and he ends up being a liar instead.
You know, Reverend, every day I'm on this radio show, I pretty much don't have anything good to say about anything, whether it's the economy or whether it's the political climate in America, and least of all do I ever say anything complimentary for the state of Israel or for those who support it. But do you see a glimmer of hope in the not too distant future that rather large block of evangelicals wakes up to the reality, because they do have the numbers and the force to change things politically in America, and you cannot discount that?
We're changing literally hundreds, if not thousands, of evangelicals over to a truly biblical position on Israel. And that biblical position is stated very clearly again and again, certainly in several dozen instances in the Old Testament, in which Jehovah tells the Hebrews that unless they are obedient, unless they obey God and exercise righteousness, justice, and mercy toward the Palestinians, they cannot go into God's holy promised land. And if they're in there and they abuse that privilege, he will expel them. Now, that's foundational biblical Old Testament and Christian law. And yet the whole Zionist movement, evangelical Zionist movement, along with the Jews of the 20th century, has basically said that obedience no longer matters. A bunch of Bolshevik, Pharisee, venerating, even secular and fanatical, Kabbalistic, Talmudic Jews can go in there blaspheming and reviling and rejecting Jesus Christ, and yet the evangelicals have said God considers them the apple of his eye. Now, many, many evangelicals are coming to truth tellers. We have about 8,000 visits a month by primarily evangelicals who are Bible studies, our twice weekly Bible studies at truthtellers.org. In fact, most of the emails I get are from evangelicals. And I should mention, I wrote an email, in fact, a month or two ago about a poll of evangelical leaders, and surprisingly, they found that only 30% of evangelical pastors and leaders in this large poll actually support Israel any longer. And it's split half and half between those who support Israel and those who don't. Half, I should say, support both Israel and the Palestinians equally. So the total unanimity of the evangelicals in support of Israel is being drastically watered down. And a large amount of it is a result of new truth, particularly the new truth that's coming across alternative radio, off of alternative internet. Do you realize that Jeff Renz has 7 million visits a month, and Alex Jones has about 7 million visits a month? Put that together, and Farah only has 7 million a month. It's 2-1 now. We are developing our own alternative media, which can very largely counteract Zionist propaganda. And the wonderful thing about the Internet is that the walls of the Internet are, they're permeable. There's a kind of a grapevine of information that travels back and forth among the various groups of the religious and political right. So many, many evangelicals, even if they don't agree with me, they know about what I'm doing and certainly have heard of Republic Broadcasting and so on.
Sure. Can we take a call quickly here, Ted?
Sure.
We got Arthur in Georgia. Hey, Arthur.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you today?
Great, thanks.
Wonderful. First of all, Mr. Pike, I would like to thank you so much for the two pieces you did, Why the Mideast Bleeds and The Other Israel, because it was through those two pieces of work that I really became, like, really aware of the Talmud and the Zionists and exactly where they are and where they stand. So thank you very much.
Wonderful. My privilege.
One thing I've noticed is I've managed to, like, really, I think, through using your work, helped to get a lot of people to understand exactly how dangerous Israel is to this country. And especially once I start showing them your work and the research to back it up. And it's amazing to me that there are still some people who just don't seem to get it no matter what you tell them. But with that in mind, I like people to think back, and I think, and this isn't a political plug for Ron Paul by any means, except for the fact that I think people should really start, for those who really aren't paying much attention to Ron Paul, I think they really need to start looking seriously at Ron, because during the last debate, he actually came out and said, cut our funding and everything to Israel. And I think that
yes,
is
he did.
Fantastic idea.
Yes, remarkable.
And the next debate is the 9th of next month. And I would hope that other people are going to do like I do. I'm going to hopefully they'll be taking questions from other people like they've been doing through YouTube, getting questions through YouTube and Facebook. And I'm going to put in a question, what exactly is your stance, Mr. Paul, on Israel, and how should we approach foreign relations with them? And if everybody would do that, we might be able to get that question out to him and really get an idea where he stands on this issue.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Thanks, Arthur.
So there's a lot of there is more concern and anger at Israel than the popular media will let on. And we hear of people sending in comments, email comments to major newspapers and so on, a very, very high percentage of criticism of Israel, and that never gets out on the front page, but it's increasing groundswell.
Well, I mean, you know, the mainstream media is so disingenuous. I mean, they are so desperate that now they are, well, primary Fox News, running with constant stories about how these Occupy Wall Street demonstrations are nothing more than anti-Semitic rallies, because obviously the subject matter is the banks and the bankers. And so whenever you bring up, for instance, the Federal Reserve or the banks or the bankers, they try to insinuate that that's just simply a code word for being anti-Semitic.
Yes, and of course the ADL is leading that aspersion. I should mention that WorldNet Daily came out with an article by Bob Unruh just last week, yeah, following the lead of ADL and actually holding up the ADL as the lawgiver, as an expert, a credible witness concerning what is anti-Semitism. And WorldNet Daily assisted ADL in its lies. Number one, ADL is saying that it's terrible, it's anti-Semitic to say that the big Wall Street financial houses such as Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, even the Federal Reserve are Jewish. And of course they are. And yet WorldNet Daily is standing behind ADL in describing those who make that assertion as anti-Semitic. And, you know, I point out, in fact, in my video, and I hope all of our listeners can get to truthtellers.org and watch that video immediately. It's about 8 minutes long, but it's super powerful, well done, and documented. But I point out that ADL is behind all of the evils which WorldNet Daily ostensibly opposes. For example, ADL probably more than any other organization, even gay rights organizations over the last 45 years, has promoted homosexuality to its No Place for Hate programs, its World of Difference programs, a myriad of educational programs with teachers and children and so on to create tolerance for homosexuality. And yet here's WorldNet Daily holding up ADL, this fountain of sodomy and same-sex marriage and anti-bullying laws, pro-homosexual legislation, hate crimes legislation. Here's ADL holding up ADL as the teacher of its 7 million visits to its website. Now, Joe Farah has to be rebuked for that. I mean, whose side is he on?
Absolutely. Let's grab another call here, Reverend. We got John in California. Hey, John.
Hello there, Robbie. Hello there, Ted Pike.
Hey.
Hey.
Hello, John.
Hey, Ted, good to talk to you. Hey, Ted, I hope you're not counting Alex Jones as being on your side in the same way that you are when you talk about the Jews and
of course not.
Okay. You may
I've written a number of articles critical of Alex Jones for not telling the truth, but I know he knows.
Okay, I was just curious as to why you were including his 7 million.
Well, I was saying that because he's kind of like a grade school, giving grade school to the world, and yet in a certain sense it leads people over to the possibility conspiracies and so on, and then indirectly it leads us even further over to the right to us.
I agree with that. It took me a while to figure it out. But, you know, when he was trying to give his one of his young co-hosts named Jason Burmess a chance to on his show to become a talk show host, Burmess being one of the three loose change kids, Burmess just about had a fit over the air and was very insulting toward someone who called up and started talking about the Jewish Hall of Fraud, the Hall of Hoax, you know. And there have been several other instances where it's just obvious he doesn't talk about the same things you do. Am I wrong? Did he ever have you on his show? It seems to me he did.
I've been on a number of times, but
you don't talk about him the same way you talk about him on Republic Broadcast.
He told me, in fact, as I was in the final days before the passage of the federal hate bill, he has always been conspicuously absent in ever inviting me on to do anything really practical to fight the hate crimes legislation. We're talking about years and years in which I would call him. I'd say, Alex, I'd leave a message. We've got to get those calls coming in. Quit bragging about your millions of listeners. We got to get those calls coming. But he's been conspicuously silent. But he did tell me in one of the last times I was on with him, he told me not to stay completely away from the subject of Jews. He says it's gotten so big that he cannot jeopardize his many stations
by
bringing up the subject of the Jews.
Of course. And it took me a while to figure that out because I knew I had heard you on his show. I just didn't remember every time what you had said and what you had not said. But I know you seem to be a lot more loquacious regarding this particular subject on Republic Broadcasting than I ever remember. I don't think I ever heard you talk this way on his show in the morning. So, anyway, I just wanted to make that point, and I'm glad I got it straight with you. So, thanks a lot for all that you're doing in this regard, Mr. Pike, and thanks a lot, Robbie.
All right, we're speaking with the Reverend Ted Pike. We'll take this final time out and be back and wrap up the first hour after these messages. Welcome back to the Flip Side for this Friday. We are speaking to the Reverend Ted Pike. His website, truthtellers.org, and a great feature on Ted's website is his link to audios of biblical answers. And one of the audio links is entitled How to Make Evangelicals a Fighting Force for Freedom. Your website offers a wealth of knowledge, Reverend, especially for those evangelicals that are looking for some answers, because I know I get a lot of emails from people saying, you know, I am causing a division in my family because, you know, my brothers or my sisters or even my parents are staunch evangelical Zionists, and whenever I try to talk to them, it breaks up the family, and I guess you've come across that.
Yes, but what I'm calling people to do is return to authentic biblical Christianity, and I point out in this latest video responding to Farah that I'm a pioneer in rethinking Christianity in regard to the Jews, to Judaism, and to the state of Israel. There's been a tremendous drift away from the true biblical ethics as revealed by Jesus and John the Baptist and the Hebrew prophets. They all criticized evil Jews and evil wicked leaders, and yet nobody calls them anti-Semitic. And yet for some strange reason, it's become a shibboleth, a taboo in the modern evangelical movement to speak a word against an evil Jew. In other words, we are supposed to be respecters of persons in regard to moral failings by the Jewish people. And the book of James prohibits that. He says, hold not the faith and the love of God in respect to persons. We are to speak even-handedly to every nationality, every person, regardless of sex or race or anything like that, according to a strict moral criteria of right and wrong. I'm just wanting to return the evangelicals and Farah and the rest of them kind of to the negotiating table where we can begin to talk about these differences, talk about what I feel has been a great oversight in part of the church, not fully comprehending and being obedient to the very Bible which the evangelicals hold up as sacred.
Well, Reverend, and I don't say this lightly, God bless you for all your work and standing up for truth in light of the vicious attacks I know you have received. It takes a man of courage and, should I say, a man of God to withstand that onslaught, and thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much, Robbie. I appreciate the many, many hosts, including you and John Stadtmiller on Republic, who have made it possible for me to get my message out over the years.
Well, Reverend, whenever you want a microphone, you just let me know, brother.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Reverend Ted Pike, go to his website, truthtellers.org, and watch the video.